Hello, everybody. Episode 131 of the Alexis L podcast. It's going to be a quick one today. I'm not feeling fantastic, so let's do that. I don't like to leave you hanging. I know how many of you like to build your week around our podcast.
Mm-hmm.
It's your week seems empty and devoid of meaning if you don't hear this podcast. So.
Yeah, it's like the structural foundation of the Salovian populations.
Yeah, it's like going to church on a Sunday.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Or mosque, or synagogue.
Yeah. Or Satanists meeting.
Yeah,
you know indeed. About Satanism, it's not really, they're like the nicest people.
Are they?
Yeah, Satanism's not really about killing goats and, doing evil and stuff. They're about... Right. The whole ethos is about being really nice.
Right.
And it's kind of an ironic church. They don't believe in any of it. They're doing it as a political statement.
Okay. Right.
Anyway. Yeah. So hail Satan.
All right.
So you had something to, you had an interesting observation about the whole Burnham, oncoming Burnham regime.
Yes. I'll do this from memory, really, trying to recall what I've read. And then, So, Andy Burnham is, in fact, not the first mayor who has become leader with an ism attached to them. He's actually the second because in 1933, Labour had catastrophic showing in the polls. And so they elected as their leader a guy called George Lansbury. George Lansbury had been the mayor of Poplar, I think, since the 20s. And he'd invented this phrase called Poplarism. Which was, which is kind of, you can kind of understand where it comes from. It was very much about, directing resources to the poor of Poplar. And he was intensely popular. And actually, I think sometime in the 20s, there was a law brought in that councils were going to be forced to set a rate and cut, various welfare programs and stuff. And I think three councils refused and were sent to prison for their refusal to set a punitive rate. And the phrase that I think Lansbury invented then, which is later used by militants in Liverpool, was better to break the law than break the poor. So Lansbury was an interesting guy. He spent some time in Australia, but his the core of his morality was his religion, really, that I think he was he a Quaker? It was certainly very religious. And Christian, but in a kind of, actually, he was a Christian in that he followed the teachings of Jesus Christ, which is actually pretty rare.
Yeah, he's not a Quaker. Christian pacifist, though.
Christian socialist pacifist, Christian. Yeah. So he was elected in 1933, and immediately, of course, the right wing of the Labour Party started and the trade union started conspiring against him. And he lost his, because he was voted out of office in 1935. Now, I mean, the question arises, because he was a pacifist and he campaigned all his life, and even when he was leader of the Labour Party, for pacifism and rejected the urge towards rearmament. And in 1935, that now looks like a pretty bad bet, really. Mm. And so, I mean, there certainly was a time when, there's plenty of points when Hitler, Nazi Germany, could have been stopped. without the Second World War, but of course nobody ever took those opportunities. But nevertheless, by 19, you know, it's just an interesting moral question whether, you know, that in a sense, I mean, I've never really completely been a pacifist. I think that, you know, that given the way the world is, I think you need some kind of military force. But he was, you know, he traveled the world speaking against war. And, you know, there's certainly a lot wrong with it. There's a lot wrong with war.
Mm-hmm.
And
I guess it's a matter of who's doing it to who and why and how.
Yeah. Well, yeah. You know, well, that's how the old concept of war is, you know, is grotesque in a sense, but, you know, it's the kind of the world we live in.
Of course.
You know, and if Britain hadn't started rearming in 35, hadn't started building fighter planes and jet tanks or the planes, you know, and ships, and, you know, we would have been an even worse state to fight the Nazis. But, you know, he held on to his positions. And certainly the people, I always get that it was, there's a good Bevin and there's a bad Bevin in the Labour Party in the 1930s. There's one who brought, kind of invented the health service. And then there's another one, obviously, like Bevins, who's a complete right-wing shitbag. And it was him who did for George Lansbury as well. So, and it was just an interesting side note. And of course, the other thing, just as a kind of a palate cleanser or a little present for you, George Lansbury's son, I think, went to the United States and gave birth to a daughter, and his daughter was called Angela, and she became Angela Lansbury. Broadway star, and then more a star on TV than films, I think. But
wow,
it's quite an interesting. Linda had quite an interesting story about Angela Lansbury, that her daughter, when they were living in Hollywood, her daughter started hanging out with this crowd of really bad people, and so Angela Lansbury moved the entire family to Ireland to get her away from these crowd of people. And you can guess who those crowd of people were. The Manson family.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, so that's another. Anyway, so I just think it's interesting. Nobody seems to have picked up on it. I didn't mention it to a friend of mine, just off for Radio 4, but, you know. I just think it's interesting, really.
Angela's father, George's son, is Edgar Lansbury, who was a wealthy English timber merchant, politician and communist, yeah. Former mayor of, he was also mayor of Poplar.
That's not a grand, is that really?
Yeah.
That's weird.
The Labour, yeah. And he died of stomach cancer when Angela was 9.
Right.
Let me, I can verify that, but that would be a bit kind of Middle Eastern to inherit a mayorship. Mayor of Poplar.
Yeah, okay.
Weirdly.
Yeah.
Unless this is a cross-wired Google result. But just to bring it round, though, because you started by saying both George Lansbury and Andy Burnham both have isms. What's Burnham's ism?
Manchesterism. It's what people...
Really?
But yeah, yeah.
So what's that?
You know, Manchesterism. Well, it's not, yeah. Well, it's a kind of fairly feeble thing, really. It's not as radical as Lansbury's popularism. Obviously, it's about taking over control, though not necessarily ownership of, like, important infrastructure like trains and trams and buses. And the council being more proactive, I think. Although, I think he's also... I suspect, you know, given a lot of concessions to developers to build giant, looking at Manchester now, the giant kind of apartment blocks, you know, glittering apartment blocks. So, but I think it's a kind of it's a fairly dilute thing, I think, but it's in contrast to, you know, the complete capitulation to, you know, the right wing forces, you know, developers and, you know, everything.
Yeah.
That's Dharmaism.
But he would argue that he's trying to draw money to the north and, you know, not make London the center of everything, isn't it?
Well, that's also, that was separate. I mean, but when he was mayor of Manchester, there was this Manchester. And I think there was probably some economic stuff as well that I can't remember, but, you know, but borrowing on the bond market's cheap or some shit like that. I don't quite understand.
And now he's been talking about number 10 North, you know, he wants to create a government center up there.
Yeah, yeah.
But more prevalent is his kind of yesterday, he did a Ask Me Anything on Twitter. And he clarified his point of view on Gaza. Did you see this?
Yeah, I read about it. Yeah.
Is it lip service at this point? Or
I suspect it will. I mean, I suspect. I don't know. We'll see, really. I mean, there was one of his MPs on this morning on Sky, a woman called Melanie Ward. Now, I've got a beef with Melanie Ward because she was the director of medical aid for Palestinians, but she dropped out to stand as a Labour MP in the Starmer.
Oh, no, come on.
And I just thought, well, it's funny because it's one of them things where I remember me and Linda, we went to like an event in 2018, a MAP event, and she gave a speech and we both thought, ooh, don't like you. And then pretty quickly she became, anyway, she was on this morning. And she is, obviously, she's got direct experience of Palestine and Palestinians, and she was saying that Burnham is, you know, I mean, it's going to be, there will be, I don't think he will.
She was saying what? Finish, what did she say?
Well, I don't know. Well, I mean, she was saying that he will look at sanctioning other right-wing individuals apart from Ben-Gavir and Smotrich, and he will look at, you know, not banning the import of settlement products. And he'll just, I suspect, issue more empty words. I mean, one barometer of how much he may change, and this was hinted at in The Guardian, but we'll see if anything happens with it, is his attitude to the prescription of Palestine action as a terrorist organization. That if he commutes that in some way, if he actually takes it away or something, and then you would think that to a degree he is at least serious about Palestine and about free speech, and if he also commuted the savage sentences of the Filton Six, extraordinary punitive sentences. If he did that, then I might start to believe that he might do something, but I think he won't do anything. I mean, the big thing is also export of F-35 fighter parts, which are made in Britain, which go to Israel. Well, if he stops, you know, because if they admit that it's a genocide, then they're not allowed to export to people who are committing a genocide. So
that's true. He hasn't said the word genocide.
No, he very deliberately hasn't. And I mean, obviously,
and he specifically said he doesn't want British bombs or bullets in to reach Israel, but he didn't mention anything about fighter jet parts.
Yeah, and then once the, you know, the Board of Deputies and the campaign against anti-Semitism starts squawking, we'll see if he has any backbone to stand up to them, really.
But for now, he's apologised for Labour's initial response.
Yeah,
to the Starmer
of Gaza. His Starmer's Zionism was kind of demented, really. I guess. I mean, it seemed to be the one thing he really believed in. I think it's maybe something to do with his wife and his wife's family. But it was just ridiculous. And of course, you know, he kept that bloody quiet when he was in Corbyn's. He'd spoken out about Palestine. He'd spoken out about Gaza until he got elected as leader of the Labour Party and then Prime Minister. I mean, he's a man of absolute dishonesty. I mean, on the same level, he lies as comprehensively as Boris Johnson did, I think, with even more malign motives in a way. So, yeah, I don't know whether this is just words to try and lure back you know, Labour voters who've gone to the Greens, because it was very clearly was a, you know, it did put Labour voters, you know, their stance on Gaza. But you still got, you know, you still got 40-50% of whatever Labour MPs are in Labour Friends of Israel. You've still got all that. I think all 9 out of 10 members of the cabinet received money from Israel, the Israel lobby. So, you know, will that change? We'll see. I mean, the tide seems to be, I mean, I don't know what it means really, but the tide seems to be turning in a sense in the United States. You know, the public opinion is massively, I think, pro-Palestinian rather than, you know, for the first time it hates Israel. Now it's turned on Israel. that obviously is not translated into political power in that. You know, still most Democrats are bought and paid for by AIPAC, but there is a slew of Democratic candidates who are, you know, saying they won't take AIPAC money, American Israel Public Affairs Committee.
As Molly, our lovely guest last week, Molly Apple, pointed out. But I think that's it at the moment. That's all we can count on, is that the language is changing, because behind closed doors, deals are still being made and support for Israel doesn't waver. And now Trump is ramping up attacks on Iran again.
I don't know what he thinks he's going to achieve with that. There was a woman on the ex-security advisor to Trump and on the 5 o'clock with Evan Davies. And I mean, she was completely delusional, really. She said, you know, the United States holds all the cards. The Iranians are bad faith actors. I mean, he didn't push her on any of this. Well, if you talk about bad faith actors, the United States bombed and murdered Iranians when they were in the middle of negotiations twice. So who's the bad faith actor here? Anyway, and she said, you know, well, you know, petrol prices have gone up like a little bit, but, you know. So, I mean, I don't know whether he was expecting her to be a bit more rational, but he didn't push her really, which was a failing, I think, on the part of Evan Davies.
And it's helpful to the oil industry as well, isn't it? They're making more money.
Well, yeah, they're making vast amounts of money. There was somebody we admire. There was a documentary, wasn't it, on Wednesday by Gary Stevens called something like How to Get Filthy Rich, which actually got a, I mean, I haven't seen it yet. I've seen the trailers and I saw a review in The Guardian, which was actually very negative about it. And I wonder about Gary Stevens. I mean, you know, his economic proposal, you know, 2%, which is minuscule, 2% tax on wealth rather than earnings, income, is, you know, more, is, you know, the baseline, really. But he lacks political analysis. I've never really seen him show any understanding of actually how politics work and
he's very open about that, though. He always like front loads that in his videos. It's I'm not a politician, I don't know politics, what I know is money, you know. I got really rich very young by doing this, and so he's very straightforward with all that. But maybe he could read up a bit now that you've got some influence.
I mean, maybe he should come on the show and you know, explain the basic tenets of Marxism to him, you know, of class war. Might help him out. Anyway, maybe The Guardian was being snotty, I don't know. But, watch it, I suppose.
Oh, yeah, they criticize his screen presence, his ability to be a presenter.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I saw him doing a podcast with the guy who presents Channel 4 News, Christian Gurumurthy. And he was actually talking. I mean, it's understandable, I suppose. He'd never made a documentary before, and he didn't understand what what one was, I think. And I think that kind of rocked him back a bit, you know. And it is, you know, it's, he said you stand around for hours in the cold and then you talk to somebody for 4 hours and you get 5 minutes. Well, yeah, that is how documentaries are made, unfortunately. But I suppose if you don't know that, if you're not come from that world, then that in itself is going to be a shock. And I wonder if that, you know, threw him, really.
Hey, recently on Sky, there was a documentary called Rick Mail, Magnificent Bastard.
Mm-hmm.
Did you get asked to be on it?
I can't remember, to be honest. I don't know if I was asked to be on it. Or...
I was shocked to see you weren't on it.
I guess, yeah. I mean, I don't, I'm sort of reluctant. I mean, I do, I'm sort of reluctant to talk about Rick, really. It's, you know, I only knew him for those kind of five intense years. And I mean, that, I mean, by their nature, documentaries like that are hagiography. Hagiography means they're kind of a stories of the saints, hagiographs. And so they really just talk about that he was brilliant all the time.
Yeah.
And he was brilliant a lot of the time, but he wasn't brilliant all the time. And I think that it would be more honest. You know, I mean, I told this story years ago. I was asked to do, like, very early on, a documentary about one of those Constant Clips documentaries about Tommy Cooper. I said, yeah, I'll go along. So I went along. And I told him I didn't like Tommy Cooper. But I genuinely thought they'd kind of like the balance, you know. Of course, that's not what was required at all.
I can imagine all their jaws dropping on set.
Yeah, yeah.
So they wrapped up in 5 minutes and said, thank you, Alexis.
Something like that, yeah, yeah.
Fuck me.
Yeah.
Yeah. It does seem very hyperbolic, just people going up there and praising and yeah, sanctifying them. Yeah, you're right. Yeah,
interesting. Yeah, he was. I mean, you know, people loved him, and he was a complicated.
But this
individual, I don't think that kind of show really can communicate that. I think it's always dishonest, and the people on it are people who are not always completely. I think are inclined to, you know, sanitize the truth. I mean, Stephen Fry and Ben Elton and people like that, you know, they don't.
Well, they also know what the show is. Like, it's made for the masses, the people who love Rick Mail because of what they've meant to him, because they've only seen the best of him, what he has on screen and things they grew up with. It means so much to them that this incredibly funny figure they grew up with, and they don't want to hear someone talking about his private life. And
oh no, it wasn't just his private life, but he could, you know, there was the odd misstep there, and it was
sure,
yeah, it was just
rose tinted,
yeah,
isn't
exactly.
It
so I should probably decline to go on it because of that, really.
Well, the Guardian reviewer, which gave Gary Stevenson's show 2 stars, gave the Rick Mail show 4 stars.
Really? I mean, is it Lucy Mangan?
Yeah.
I mean, she's a fucking idiot. I shouldn't say that. The Guardian's reviewing my book.
Hopefully not her.
No, not her.
One of her rivals, hopefully. Make sure she doesn't get sent it. have you got it in you to do an Alexi Reacts after this or not?
No, I think we'll leave it for this week.
We'll skip that this week. Sorry, folks. Have you got it in you to quickly rank a few more of your IMDb?
We could do. Sure. First of all, listings? Shouldn't we mention our live podcast recording at the Roundhouse?
Yes, we certainly should.
Second
of August, it's a matinee at 2:30 p.m. You'll be home in time for tea.
Around Hurst in Camden, you can buy a tie-dye T-shirt or whatever they sell in Camden Market these days.
It's not that anymore, mate. It's just Taylor Swift and Harry Styles T-shirts.
I think it also, isn't it, owned by an Israeli guy who funds money to the IDF. So
yeah.
Don't buy anything there.
Don't go to Camden Market and buy
anything.
Don't
go to Camden Market.
But do come to the Roundhouse Theatre in Camden on the 2nd of August. where me and Alexi will be chatting with Diane Morgan live on stage. It's sure to be a rollicking romp of a experience. Get your tickets. Just Google or Bing or DuckDuckGo or Ask Jeeves about the Roundhouse Comedy Festival and buy your tickets for the Alexi Sale Podcast Live. And there's loads of other great shows happening there. We're going to mention that on every show until it happens. We want to fill that room up. It's the biggest room we've ever done live together as a pair. I think individually we've both played bigger rooms than that.
Sure.
Our rope tackle show is sold out. We're going to be in Shoreham a few days before that, but that's sold out. So don't worry about that, folks. Support the show on Patreon. Go to patreon.com/AlexiSaleSpodcast for exclusive content and full video podcasts and chat rooms where you can ask questions directly to Alexi. Things like, does Alexi endorse Count Binface? Asks Kate.
I turned down because it's on August the 2nd. Mitch Benz doing a benefit for Count Binface in Clacton. It's not exactly Gaza, is it? I guess. I mean, anybody rather than Farage, I suppose. He's such a creepy geezer.
Yeah. That's on the same day as our Roundhouse show.
Yeah.
Okay. Could we stand to rank a couple more things from IMDb before we go?
I said that film, Last Word, it wasn't because you got it, sent me the link. It was actually
Lost for Words.
Lost for Words was something I'd done. In 1980, it was this girl I was at Chelsea with, I think a student a couple of years below me, Anna Thew, and she's quite an avant-garde filmmaker. I haven't watched it yet, but so it wasn't what I thought it was anyway.
No? Yeah, you're just like eating some cake by the road or something, reading a poem or something like that. Very avant-garde, extremely avant-garde. Okay, look, to remind you, we've been going through Alexi's IMDb from the oldest to the newest. We've done 5 films and TV shows and shorts that he's done and listed them in order of Alexi's preference. And we're going to keep going through until we have a comprehensive list of Alexi's favorite stuff he's done, basically. So far, at number 5, we've got Walcott from 1981, your episode of Walcott. Number 4, we've got Lost for Words, that avant-garde film. Do you want to move that down the list now that you've seen it?
Oh, well, I haven't seen it.
Okay. Right. Number 3, we've got Repeater from 1979. Number 2, Transmogrification, I call it, from 1980. And number 1 was Boom Boom, Out Go Out the Lights, 2 specials with combining them. But now we're moving into 1981, further into 1981, and stuff gets good. We've got the comic strip movie from 1981.
Yeah. I mean, I've talked about that before. I mean, it was Julian Temple, who was father of Juno Temple, who was a bit of a, the only good film he ever really did was Great Rock and Roll Swindle. It was a bit of a, bit of a complicated person. And he came and shot. There was some story of a kind of Brechtian story of Dawn coming down to London. She'd been in the Salvation Army. She comes down to London. She's corrupted by alternative comedy or something. I can't remember. So it is actually the only film, I think, that exists of our acts in that show, that in 1981 at the Comic Strip Club. But because he filled the audience with extras, he, you know, just didn't react in a normal way. All the performances are slightly off, I think.
Yeah.
Mine certainly is. Interesting.
That was done today. They would have cameras in the real club.
Exactly.
And then
yeah.
film all the narrative stuff separately, yeah. isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, so it doesn't work. And I think after that, Peter also decided he wanted to take control of things, really, because Julian Temple didn't really get it.
Right. So where would you put that on our list?
Sounds probably like last at the moment. Yeah.
Well, worse than Walcott.
I put it in the middle. I don't care.
Well, better
well,
or worse
it's good
than
it's a historical document. Yeah. It's worth.
Surely it's better than transmogrification.
I don't know. I haven't watched that either. I've got but that's I love the director, Henry Smog, the director of Transmogrification. I love.
So. All right, better than Repeater.
Ugh, probably. I mean, I don't know. I'm fond of Chris Munger as well, really.
Okay, better than Lost for Words?
Yeah, put it, yeah.
Okay, it's coming in at number four.
I think this taxonomy is pretty pointless, but yeah.
No, it's not pointless. It's meaningful, and also it's a great tool to just hear your memories of these things. We'll do one more. Whoops Apocalypse comes in, 1982. Four episodes. It's the TV series of Whoops Apocalypse.
Actually, I should tell this story very quickly. That Robin Williams used to turn up and do like an hour at the comic strip.
Yeah.
And actually,
wasn't that at the comedy store?
No, the comic strip. Okay. The comedy store and then the comic strip.
Right.
Actually, it couldn't have been the Julian Temple film because there was a proper audience in. Actually, forget that story. I'll tell it another time.
Okay, vague reference to Robin Williams. That'll get some listeners in. Whoops Apocalypse, the TV series.
Yeah, I mean, really two writers who are still very dear friends of mine, David Rennick and Andrew Marshall. It was a sitcom, went out on LWT, which at the weekends, there was regional broadcasters in those days in the 80s.
So yes, London,
London, West. So the Northwest was Granada, the Yorkshire TV, Tyne Tees.
LWT stand for London?
London Weekend Television. So at the weekend, everything was provided by a completely different company, which was London Weekend Television.
Wow.
And they had a very interesting artistic policy. So this is Whoops Apocalypse, which I think it went out about 10 on a Sunday night. It's a sitcom about, it's quite surreal, quite broad, but it's about essentially a nuclear war. Now we get to that point, really. So, yeah, and David and Andrew had been down to the comedy store and they'd liked what they saw of me and then we'd become friends then. And so they asked me to be in Whoops Apocalypse, which I was happy to do.
Commissar Solzhenitsyn.
No relation, yeah. And then years later, we went on, 8 years later, we went on to write Exercise stuff together.
Ah. Wow, the seedlings of greatness. 7.3 out of 10 on IMDb. Where do you rank it, Lex?
I don't know. I don't know.
Well, surely you sounds like you prefer it to the comic strip.
Comic strip movie? Yeah.
What about Boom Boom Out Goes the Lights?
You're not really comparing like with like, you know what I mean?
But where does it sit different in things. Your heart, you know? You're not, don't be a critic here. Just your fondness.
Above Boom Boom Out Goes the Lights.
We really need to figure out the science behind this so that you can just more easily rank these things. We'll have a meeting. We're going to call a meeting about it. But for now, we're going to call it there. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I'm putting Boom Boom Go Whoops Apocalypse 1982 TV series at the top of this chart. And second place, Boom Boom Out Go the Lights. Third place, Transmogrification. Repeater, Comic Strip, Lost for Words, and Walcott at the bottom. I wonder if anything will ever take over Walcott as bottom place. Save file, Alexis Sale, and listeners at home, I wish you a very pleasant week. I wish you good health, Alexi. Hope you feel
better.
Thank
you. All right. Bye-bye, everybody. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Alexis Sale podcast. This show is produced and edited by Talal Karkouti. Music by Tarbush Records. Thanks to Audio Boom for hosting us. Please keep your emails coming in at alexisellpodcast@gmail.com. Goodbye.